So I got some feedback. Hopefully it was positive from last week's shiur. We spoke a lot about the chocolate. So some people told me whether they enjoyed the shiur, they enjoyed the chocolate. I'm not sure, but at least we heard some good things about it. So I figured, okay, if food seems to excite people, we'll talk about another exciting topic of food. It was actually another, it's not as sweet as chocolate, but some people may prefer it in place. I can't say it's less cholesterol than chocolate either, but less fat. But I want to talk a little bit about actually a real shiloh. Halach l'maisa that I received, and strangely enough, I received the identical shaila from two different places within the last like week and a half or so. So I figured, oh good, it's a good as any siman in a shemayim, that maybe it's good I give a little shia about it. So those were in my shul, so we spoke a little bit about it on Motzei Shabbos, this past Timin Chamayim shia. So those who were at that shia, hopefully we'll still add more now, elaborate a little upon the Bar Mikamas, you know, flesh it out a little bit more. Those didn't hear the shiur yet, so it'll be hopefully for the first time. So the shaila came to me from two totally different places, two different vads at the similar shaila. That I don't know why, but they both made the same mistake. They both use non-kosher cheese. Now I'm gonna have to qualify that statement. So let's, instead of saying non-kosher cheese, cheese without what we would consider to be a recommended hashgacha. We'll leave it for politically correct purposes. It was a cheese that was under a quote-unquote supervision that we wouldn't normally accept in our establishments. And this cheese was used. It was actually made in pizza, whatever, some other kind of food. It was made in an oven. And the question is really multiple fold. That number one, is the cheese not kosher in the first place? Just because something is not quote-unquote under a supervision. A lot of things not under supervision. A bottle of water is also not under supervision, but that's okay. Certain things that require supervision. So is what we would consider to be an unsupervised cheese, is that really truly a halakhic problem? Is that really considered to be non-kosher? That's question number one. And question number two, if that is the case, that it's not acceptable to eat, what are the ramifications of that in terms of kalim, utensils that come to contact with it? The general rule is, things that are not kosher can trafe up the kalim, can potentially impact on ovens and other utensils that come into contact with them. And then the third part of the shaila is, even if you assume that we're dealing with a quote-unquote non-kosher cheese and you're dealing with a potential problem with kalim, is there a way to salvage it? Is there a way to kasher these kalim in particular? Is there a way to kasher an oven? So there are a lot of different parts of the shaila that we have to discuss. So I don't know whether we can even get to all parts of the shadow, but at least let's get started with the question. I'm sorry. I didn't say anything yet, but
I just want to know, what type of cheese are you talking about? Between a hard and a, you know, was this a hard cheese issue or a soft cheese?
No, this is not an issue of weighting issue. This is a question of kasher. So I'm talking about a cheese that would be used in pizza. Okay, a cheese that would be used in pizza. I think that was the case that I was talking about. Okay? So let's begin this sugya talking about non-kosher, or perhaps the more correct halachic term is non-Jewish cheese. You may have noticed the name of the Mamakomus is Gvinas Akbom. So there's a little bit of a switch. It says on the top Gvinas Akbom, and then in English it says for non-kosher cheese, how did Akbom, which means literally idolater or non-Jew, how does that translate to be non-kosher? So this is a throwback to the Mishnah, the second parak of Maseches Avot Zarah, where the Mishnah lists off a whole series of different kinds of foods and beverages that are prepared by non-Jews that are not permitted to be eaten. Some of the things on the list are pure kashrus issues, and some of them are not absolute kashrus issues. Some of them are kashrus-related issues in the following sense. So for example, one of the things that's on the list is bishul akum, food that was cooked by a non-Jew. According to most opinions, food cooked by a non-Jew is not a pure kashrus issue. It is prohibited because we're afraid it may lead to intermarriage. Chazal were concerned about intermarriage, therefore they declared it to be, that it's non-kosher. So if you're running a restaurant and you're advertising that you're kosher and you're serving bishul akum, then you're not telling the truth, then you are not serving kosher food, even though the rationale for the assert didn't start in terms of pure kosher per se. So on that list of so many other things that are there, things that are produced by non-Jews that are non-kosher, is gvinas akum, is cheese that was produced by non-Jews, cheese that was made by non-Jews. So the Gemara raises the question on the first of the Mamakomos. So what was the reason for this? What is this all about? So the Gemara tells us a startling thing about this gezeira of gvinas akum. The Gemara says, "Amar ula v'item rashvu bar abba gezeira chadashi ve'emefachtokin bo." That it was a new gezeira when it's recorded in the Mishnah, it's not something that had been around for hundreds and thousands of years. It was a fairly new Mishnah, a fairly new Gezeira back in the days of the Mishnah. And we have to be careful not to question it too much, not to delve into it too much, not to potentially belittle this Gezeira. The Gemara actually tells us in the context that Chazal were of the practice that whenever they were making a new Gezeira, they wouldn't talk about it too much for the first year. They wouldn't want to publicize the reason for the Gezeira because they were afraid that people would think, well, that Gezeira doesn't really apply to me, or that reason isn't really right. It doesn't apply to us. So people would start to belittle the Gezeira. They first wanted it to become part of general norm of Torah observance. Then afterwards, for Lomtus purposes, they would explain what the reason was. So the Gemara says, after a year was over, so Taka, why did they make it? What's wrong with the non-Jewish cheese? So apparently all the ingredients presumably are kosher. What's the problem? So the Gemara gives us a startling reason why Gvina Sakam was prohibited, according to the first reason. The Gemara says, my Gezerik, what was the reason? I'm Mishum and Paz, Mishum and Mishum Nikur. The reason was, believe it or not, it's related to snakes. What's up to it, snakes? So there's a din that is a halacha that, of the Nishmatim and Nafsha Sechem, that you have to be careful. You have to be very, very safe. You have to do anything and everything to protect one's life and protect one's health. So Chazal were very, very concerned about this. They take a look at the Rambam, the end of the Tzeach, where the Rambam talks about the details about this, how the Nishmatim and Nafsha Sechem is a real halacha. And one of the things that Chazal prohibited because of the Nishmatim and Nafsha Sechem was, you have to be careful not to have any liquid that was left uncovered. It's called the magula, anything that's prohibited from giloy, because there's a concern that a snake may have got into it, may have deposited some poison into it, and that in itself could potentially be dangerous. So Chazal said that you're not allowed to drink water that was left magula, you can't have wine that was left magula, any liquid that was left magula, so is a problem. So comes the Gemara and says that maybe that's the reason why the cheese is prohibited, because the non-Jews weren't so careful about this. So they would sometimes use milk that was not necessarily guarded carefully because of the snakes, and potentially there may be some poison in it. And that's the reason why you can't eat the cheese. So what the Gemara is saying is that the Isser of Gvinas Akam at this stage is nothing with kashrus per se. The same way that Bishul Akam has nothing to do with kashrus. It's a totally different concern. There was a concern of intermarriage. Here it's a concern of danger to one's life. Chazal prohibited this kind of eating as part of the general Torah prohibition of Nishmatim and Nafshei Seichem. That's the first understanding of the Yisrael. Then the Gemara goes on and gives a totally different reason. Shmuel Amar, Yibnei Shema Midnos Abba Or Kevas Nevela. Shmuel says that the reason why you can't have cheese made by a non-Jew has nothing to do with snakes, nothing to do with danger. It's a real kashrus concern. The kashrus concern is that the way to prepare cheese is to expose it to the stomach of an animal, the cava, the fourth stomach of an animal, and that cava has in it the rennet. It has the ability to coagulate the milk, to cause the milk to curdle, to cause the milk to become cheese. So just as in the animal's stomach, that's what happens, so too, that can happen. We can do it ourselves. We can mimic that process. What we do is we take some milk and we pour it mix it together with the ore of the cava, with the flesh of the animal's stomach, and that's going to become the cheese making process. So Gemara says that's wonderful, except for the fact that the animal that's being used is an non-kosher animal. It wasn't shechted properly. It's a non-Jew. So the animal that the non-Jew is using to make his cheese with is non-kosher meat. Besar Nevela, and therefore to use Besar Nevela to make cheese would pose a problem. Some of you may be wondering, well, why isn't it a problem? Forget about being non-kosher. Why isn't it a problem with Bosa B'cholof? So you have to hang in there for a moment. We'll get to that dimension. So according to the seventh understanding of the Gemara, it's a real kashrus concern. It's a fear that lest a non-Jew is using the non-kosher ingredients in order to produce this cheese. So we have two very, very different approaches in the Gemara, what the background for this prohibition is. One is nothing to do with kashrus per se, it has to do with sakana. And number two is it's a pure kashrus concern. Which one of these is the accepted lahalacha? And what would the potential ramifications of a difference be? That's what Tosfos picks up on the second of the Mamakamos. So Tosfos says that in the second of the Mamakamos, alavad, the first line, alavad, einatam, elamishum mikur. So Tosfos, quoting the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that the real reason is the first reason. That's the emissary reason why the cheese is also in the first place, is because we're concerned with the snakes. And now Tosfos in one fell swoop says, So Tosa says that we who don't have snakes, Baruch Hashem, we don't have snakes roaming around, we hope. And therefore, we're not so worried about Giloy. Proof positive. We'll pour ourselves a cup of water and walk out of the room and come back and drink the water. We didn't think Gemara, not allowed to do that. We didn't think Gemara, if water was left uncovered, not allowed to drink it. Hashash of Giloy. So the answer is we don't care about it anymore because we don't have snakes anymore. So this Issa doesn't speak to us. The same way that Maya Magulim and Yaya Magulim and all the other Isum Gilui don't apply to Zman Azazas Tosis, who had Dinami, the Issa of cheese, of Goisha cheese, doesn't apply because it was never really also for any cashless concerns in the first place. And therefore, Gilui doesn't apply, and therefore the Issa of cheese, Zman Azazas, doesn't apply. But then Tosis raises the question, wait a second, didn't the Rabbanon don't just disappear into thin air? We have a rule that once a Gezerah the Rabbanon is made, it lasts forever, unless another Beis Din nullified it. And there are rules that govern what koach a later Beis Din has to nullify previous Isurim. So Tosis continues. The Ein Lomar, the Davar Shivan Minyanu, Bitzorach Minyan Achel HaTirai, don't say that it was something that was prohibited to vote. Davar Shivan Minyan is a phrase to mean that there was a Beis Din had a Minyan, the Umdul Minyan, they voted and they decreed that the following should be Elsur. Once something is a Davar Shivan Minyan, you need another Minyan to be Matarit. It doesn't say that doesn't apply over here. Kibadehu kisha amru tchil, kisha, I'm sorry, kisha asu tchil alo asu ela b'mokum shenachashim etzuyim. So it says, tells us that this gezeira, this isser of mayim agulim, this isser of not having water and wine and liquids that were exposed, this isser was never made across the board. It was only made in a place where there are snakes. So this is always a tricky thing. How do you know this? So you really need Ruach HaKadosh. You have to be a Rishon to know. Some gezeiros were made as low plugs. They were made across the board. And other gezeiros were only made in that locale where there's a problem. So Tosis is assuming that the Isser of Mayim Agulim was only made in the location where there are snakes. And the greatest proof is the Minig Olam. Nobody that we know of today is Machbit on Mayim Agulim anymore. So Tosis says, since Mayim Agulim and Yayim Agulim and all the liquids that Magulim were only instituted Bimacha when there are snakes, in France today, says Tosis, or in Tinek today, hopefully there are no snakes floating around. So therefore, the Isser of Gilui doesn't apply. And then by extension, the corollary is the Isser of the Goyesha cheese doesn't apply as well. That's in one fell swoop. Tosis just knocked out of the box the entire sugya of green socks. Then Tosis doesn't understand. Then Tosis says, in the third line, he says, wait a second, I have another reason. Maybe, says Tosis, the second reason is the correct one. Maybe the reason why the cheese is prohibited is real kashrus concern because they're using non-kosher animal products. It says Tosis, maybe that's only true if that's the method of making cheese where you live. What if you live in a place where they don't do that? They use flowers, herbs, plants, use all other kinds of, there are other ways to cause the milk to curdle. So the rennet of the animal is one method, but there are other methods as well. So says Tosfos, maybe if you live in a place where they don't use the animal method anymore, so then maybe the cheese would have been aser. Tosfos says, we're not the first ones to think of this. Said in the communities of Narvon, Narvon was in southern France. The Malaitis lived in northern France. Narvon was in southern France in Provence. Rav Moshe Adarshan, Rashi quotes all the time, lived in one of the Chachmei Narvona. So Tosfos quotes that the Chachmei Narvona used to be lenient. And in their communities, they used to eat the Goyesha cheese because the whole reason doesn't apply. So basically, Tosfos just presented us with two different approaches to be matir, the non-Jewish cheese, b'zman hazeh. One is to say it's all based on snakes and the snakes don't apply, then the issa doesn't apply, and it's not a davar shebeminyan. And the second approach is to say it is based on real kashrus concerns, but those kashrus concerns may not apply either. If you live away. So, Bain Lefi the first day in the Gemara, Bain Lefi the second day in the Gemara, it sounds like we're good to go. It sounds like we have a good heter. But before we begin to analyze and see the dissenting view, which is going to ultimately become the prevalent view, Lahavacha, we have to stop and ask ourselves, wait a second, why are we even having this discussion about why the non-Jewish cheese is usher? Isn't it obvious why it's usher? Isn't it usher because it's made out of milk? And isn't the milk usher? Doesn't the Mishnah say in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, the same Mishnah, Cholav shechol va'alkum, the Ein Yisrael A was usher? If a non-Jew milks a cow and brings you a cup of milk and you didn't watch the milking, that milk is also, that milk is not kosher. And that's a real kashrus concern. You know what the problem is? We're afraid lest he mixed in a little bit of non-kosher milk. If the milk comes from a cow, that's wonderful. But if it comes from a pig or from a camel, that's a big problem. Then it's also min haTorah. Any product that comes from a non-kosher animal, by definition, is non-kosher. That the Mishnah says b'feirush. That you're not allowed to have milk that was milked by a non-Jew. So what are we knocking our heads against the wall to figure out why the cheese of a non-Jew is not kosher? It's not kosher because it's made by milk. And the milk was not kosher. So here, it's a very, very strange thing. Namely, if the non-Jew brings you milk, that's a huge problem. But if he brings you cheese, that's much less of a problem. Why is that less of a problem? So the Rambam, the third of the Rambam Kamos, fills us in with a little bit of just cheese-making information. So the Rambam tells us in Perek Gimel Lachi Yedeis, in the third of the Rambam Kamos, Cholabei mitimeya eino nikva ve'omek yichalav ha-tahora. That milk from a non-kosher animal, from the non-kosher animals, at least that were prevalent in the days of Chazal, that kind of milk will not curdle, will not turn into cheese. It has to do with the fat content in the milk. I don't know enough about it, but I remember at the time reading up on it. So the makeup of fat level in the pig's milk and the camel's milk, in contrast to the sheep milk and the goat milk and the cow's milk, is different, and it's never going to really turn into cheese. So therefore, the Rambam tells us, since the reality is that the kosher milk can turn into cheese, non-kosher milk cannot turn into cheese. If you're going to mix the two together, and then you're going to try to turn it into cheese, you're going to throw the remnant into it, that other stuff is going to go, I think we can call it a little Miss Muffet for this one, the curds and whey. So the curds will become the cheese, and then the non-kosher milk is going to go off on the whey, fall by the wayside, it's going to come go with the whey, no pun intended, it's going to go off on the side, and it's never going to become part of the cheese. So the Rambam has told us why, strangely enough, when the non-Jew brings you a cup of milk, then we have serious problems. The non-Jew brings you a piece of cheese, then you have, then we have to search and scratch your head to try to figure out why is it us in the first place. Now, we know that many of us are significantly more lenient about the question of Cholav Akum, because the whole reason why Cholav Akum was usur was because we're afraid that it's non-kosher milk mixed in. That's where Moshe Feinstein has his famous kula, his famous leniency, that if you live in a place where there's proper government supervision, and we know for a fact nobody's mixing pig's milk. There's no way in the world anybody in the dairy farms in America today is putting camel's milk in there. It's just not happening. The government is supervising him. The guy's going to lose his license. He'll be fined $1 million. It's never going to happen. So therefore, Moshe said, there's manazeh. Our regular plan, you go to ShopRite, buy a container of milk. That's called Chol Yisrael. Chol Yisrael doesn't mean that it was literally watched through the eyes of a Jew. But Moshe writes, if you know that it was done by from a kosher animal, that's ilu you actually saw with your own two eyes. So we sometimes say, you know, a person will say, I'm not makbid of Chol Yisrael. That's really not a correct statement. To say I'm not makbid of Chol Yisrael means that you don't keep kosher. That means you've redefined, not you. Ramesh has, in a sense, redefined, reformulated for us what Chol Yisrael means. Milk in America, quote unquote, non-Jewish milk in America, is halachically Chol Yisrael. That's what Ramesh's psak was, because we know that it came from a cow. So if a Jew knows it came from a cow, that's the halakhic equivalent of a Jew seeing that it came from a cow. So now we have almost like a little bit of a flip. In terms of pure kashrus, milk was a much, much more serious problem with Zman Chazal. Cheese was a significantly less problem, but we have to bend over backwards to figure out why is it usher in the first place. But now, almost everything is flipped, because the milk is much less of a problem, because the whole reason for the milk was maybe it came from a treif animal, and that doesn't exist as much as that. So that we're not worried about anymore. So again, some people are makbel Chol Yisrael on old style Chol Yisrael today, but many of us are made to have regular plain, quote unquote, Galician milk. But the cheese is still a problem. So Bizman Chazal, the milk was more of a problem. Bizman Azeh, the cheese is more of a problem, because the cheese was a separate independent gezeira, and we have to figure out, does the gezeira apply to us or not? So according to Tosfos, the answer is no. According to Tosfos, we're good to go. As long as two facts are true, according to Tosfos. If number one, you live in a place where there are no snakes, and number two, you live in a place where all the cheese is made, not using rennet, not using animal rennet. If those two statements are, I didn't say they're both true, but if both of those two statements are true, then the cheese should be okay. So do we paskin like this Tosfos? Do we follow the halacha of this Tosfos? So the answer is probably not. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch in the fourth of the Rambam Kamos tells us in Yeridei and Siman Kuf Tezvav. Gvinas avdi kichav masurin, So says Tosfos that, says the Shulchan Aruch that the reason why the cheese is osur is because of the rennet problem. So first of all, the Shulchan Aruch is rejecting the reason of the snakes. He's focusing on the second reason. But unlike Tosfos, now the Shulchan Aruch says the following. So says the Shulchan Aruch, even if the cheese was made through herbs, through plants, through grass, through other things, not through animal products, not through animal rennet, it's still osur. Why is that? Didn't Tosfos say it's mutter? Yes, Tosfos said it's mutter. But the Rambam and other Rishonim didn't say that. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting the other opinions of Rishonim who say that it was actually a low plug. It was across the board. So unlike the Chachmei Navona and the Baalei HaTosfos, who are willing to be make, or that if you live in a place where they're not using rennet for making of cheese, all cheese is okay, says the Shulchan Aruch. We don't pass like that. We pass like the Rambam and other Rishonim who say that the decree was made across the board as a low plug. Therefore, all cheese is problematic, as Banazah. Says the Ramah v'chein aminug. Says the Ramah, even though the Ramah very often followed the Baalei HaTosfos, here the Ramah says the minig in the Ashkenazi communities became against Tosfos, came against the Chachmei Navona, and the custom became, as a low plug, all the Goyisha cheeses is off limits. The Ein Lefrotz Geder, says the Ramah, don't break through the fence. That's a phrase that's used when we speak about a certain chumra, a certain sheet or a minig, whatever the Kleisel have adopted. So the poskim want to say that don't be mezalzel, don't take it lightly. It's called Ein Lefrotz Geder. Strangely enough, the end of that phrase is Poretz Geder, as the poskim tells, Poretz Geder Yishchenu Nachash. If a person breaks a wall, maybe you don't know what's on the other side. There may be a snake on the other side. So that phrase Poretz Geder Yishchenu Nachash is used when a person violates something that has been accepted practice in Klal Yisrael. So the last thing we want to bring back to life are the snakes. We're trying to get rid of the snakes before. We don't give it to Chis Amesim. But the bottom line is the Mechaber and Ramah both say that one should not be eating non-Jewish cheeses. Even if there's no per se kashrus issue, there is a kashrus issue because there's a special gezeira the Rabbanon, non-Jewish cheeses are off limits. And then the Ramah adds one disclaimer. If you have a practice from the Deiris HaKadmonim that you live in Narbonne, you live in southern France, and they've been doing this in Provence for the last 800 years, okay, so then you follow what your minig hamokom is, what your minig of your mishpacha is. But if the minig is not that way, there was no het there, most kadmonim, and therefore you should follow the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah's strong stance on this, that the cheese is considered to be not acceptable, not permissible to be. Yeah, so that's another question.
I have two questions. Like one of them about the gezera, when the Tosafot says that maybe because they didn't know how good that kind of a minhag in one place, therefore it's not accepted. So how come he doesn't say that about wine? B'makom shelum naschim.
Very good, excellent question. So the Rishonim point out that there are actually two different reasons for the issue of wine. One is because of the pouring to the idols, and the other is because of chasas, because of intermarriage. So it's very possible, there are more paskins this way, that the reason of nisuch actually doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh. The only reason why the wine is still treif today is because of chasas. So you're 100% right. You're mechavin to the Ramah.
Okay, so the other part is, why are we worried about him adding non-kosher milk while he's mixing it, and not worry maybe the additives that he puts later will be non-kosher too?
In the olden days, there were no additives. Everything was simple. But Zman Hazeh, you open up you look at a food label, there are 1,600 things. You have no idea what they mean. In the olden days, Food was much easier. That's why all the bread was really kosher. And all the bread, everything was made from very, very basic. So it sounds like Both according to Shulchan Aruch and according to the Ramah, we should not be eating the non-Jewish cheeses, even if there's no kashrus issue per se. That's exactly the reason why the hashgachas in the world today, in America, we're talking about the shows in America for now, that we generally rely on would not accept non-Jewish cheese. Even if in theory we went through the ingredients and we found them to be kosher, even if they're not using rennet, which some cheeses actually are using rennet, but even in the niach that they're not using any rennet at all, and we're not so worried about the snakes, so even though it passed all the ingredient tests, it would still be not acceptable. The same way Bishalakam also passes the ingredient tests and it's still off limits because they made a gezeira, the Rabbanon, not to eat it as a low plug. It's a davar shel minyan. Whether the reason applies, doesn't apply. Kavinas acham is treif mit the rabban. That's how all the, you know, the regular shkachs that we rely on, this man is there, follow. However, there are certain supervisions that are out there that don't follow what says the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. That they're, maybe they're still from Narvon, they're still from, I don't know where they're from. They're relying on these shittas and Rishonim, the Minikaimainim that we generally don't follow. So, and they're still giving supervision on these kinds of cheeses. So again, we Lechatchil would never use these kinds of cheeses. But now the question becomes, by mistake, have we used? Now the question is, what do you do now? So b'di'evid, how does that impact on the kalim? So should we say that something that there are certain legitimate shittas out there that it was kosher? I mean, there were chachmei rishonim, rishon arshin, rabbeinu tam, the only rishon who held it was okay, even though those opinions have been outvoted and not been followed in the last 800 years. So can we say b'di'evid that maybe we don't have to kashin the kalim? So this is a part of the discussion that appears in the fifth of the Ma'amar Kamos. The Gemara is a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says that there's a parish in Chumash in Parshas Matos that Kasher and Kalim. The Torah describes that they went out to war against the Midyanim, so they conquered the Midyanim and they got all these pots and pans and silverware. So the Torah says you could use them if you kasher them first. You have to cash them either through Hagola, through Libra. We spoke about this not that long ago. We spoke about frying pans. You have to cash them each in the proper manner. The Gemara says that what do you have to cash it for? We have a rule called Noser Dam of Gam. Any non-kosher food that tastes so bad, it becomes by definition kosher again. If I take a piece of chazer and I leave it out of the fridge for days, it starts to smell and taste horrific, then it loses its status of treifus. So comes the Gemara and says, whenever you have a belia, you have a taste that gets absorbed into the walls of a pot. If the 24 hours, the game's over. If the 24 hours, so it's it doesn't taste good anymore. So whatever belia, whatever taste is inside the walls of the pot, if the 24 hours is by definition kosher. So Gemara says, if so, what do you have to kasher kalim for? What does the Torah say to kasher kalim? Just wait 24 hours. The Gemara says, you're right. Well, us retire like there, Basyama. That the entire parish of Kashrut Kalim was only said for within 24 hours. If it's after 24 hours, then everything's okay. Then it's less done with Gam and finished. So yes, Gemara, really? Is that true? So Mekan be'echlish tiri. So why do we ever bother Kashrut Kalim for? That trafe something up. Big deal. So wait 24 hours and use it. What am I wasting my time Kashrut Kalim for? Says the Gemara, no. Gezeira k'deira shen v'syama v'shub k'deira v'syama. That although in the Torah it's true, once you waited 24 hours, the pot is kosher. But the Rabbanan and Chazal were afraid that if we let you use things after 24 hours, next thing you know is you're going to use it within 24 hours. I literally just got off the phone a couple of hours ago. Someone called me the following shayla, a whole complicated, convoluted shayla that something was they were cooking flacious and something from a milky pot fell into it. A whole story. So I asked them the basic question: was the Kedera Basiyan or not? Was it within 24 hours or not? So they said, well, we used it last night for making supper. And they were calling me around supper time. So I said, well, what time did you eat supper last night? They didn't remember. I said, around now. Around before, around after. They didn't remember. So it gets tricky. So if you're going to tell everybody, you have 24 hours, everything's good to go. The 24 hours is going to become 23 and a half hours. And then 22 minutes, and then 10 hours. And then Gezer, Kenem, and Yom, Atab, and Yom. So therefore, Midirabon and Chazal said, you can't rely on the cool 24 hours. You have to cash in the kid. So the way we practice today, our kashering of kalim today is almost always the Midir Rabbanan. No one's kashering kalim within an hour after it became trade. So the whole institution of kashering kalim, Hakol Mikol Kol today, is all going to be Midir Rabbanan. So now one can raise the following question. Would I eat this cheese outright? The answer is no. Can I say that it's treif l'chavadeitz? No, can't say that either. So could I make the following calculation? That vis-a-vis kasher and kalim, which at worst is a derabbanan and a derabbanan, a derabbanan, a low-level derabbanan, maybe you could argue that vis-a-vis the gezeira of ena ben yom, ata ben yomo, so maybe you could argue we could rely on the chachmei nevoina, we could rely on Rabbein Tam, that as long as we have a valid sheet in poskim, a valid sheet in rishonim, who permitted this food, l'chatchila, Rabbein Tam and chachmei nevoina, said you could serve it for dinner tonight, so we're not going to do that, but at least vis-a-vis requiring the kasha of the oven, maybe we can rely on those sheetas. The whole kasha in the oven anyway is not really, really required. I mean, it's required, but it's only a gezeira, otu ben yom. So there's some posts from Hatzachachish. He said that when we're dealing with things that are mamish treif, then you have to kasher. Things that are machleks in one of the treif, and they're legitimate cheetahs that say they're even kosher, so then we could rely on that cheetah vis-a-vis this gzera d'rabbanan. That would be one side of the kula. Could we possibly add a little bit to this? Maybe we could make it a little bit better. So the next question was really, did this oven actually become treif in the first place? Did it really get a bleed? Did it really get an absorption of taste? So this is a general question. We spoke about this in the past. We spoke about this in years gone by. Pesach Shirim, about ovens. It's not so poshut that an oven actually gets a bleed in the first place. Because if you think about it, the food doesn't really touch most of the oven. Maybe it's sitting on the bottom of the oven, maybe it's touching part of the oven. But the real issue of oven is not so much that it's touching the walls of the oven. It's the steam, the zeya that's coming out of the food that's spreading, and potentially, in a sense, trafing up the whole oven. So the very fact that we're viewing ovens as almost being like a pot that food was cooked in is presupposing that there was actually a spread of steam there. Now, is that a true statement or not? So you have to apologize that the sixth of the Mar Makomas is the wrong Mar Makom. It's the right Mar Makom and the wrong Chelek of Shulchan Aruch. It's supposed to be your day. So if you have a chance when you get home, you're at home now, you get a chance to take a look later, it's in your day, Simon Tzadi Bey Simchas. Or Chaim Tzadi Bey says absolutely nothing to do with this topic. If you're trying to figure out what has to do with the topic, let me know, because it doesn't. It has nothing to do with the topic. It's supposed to be in your day. So I'll have to share with you the Alpha. So it's in your day, in Simon Tzadi Bey, when the Shulchan Aruch calls from a rush, the very institution of Zay in the first place. The rush describes that if you have an oven, in the old days they had an oven and there was a little bit of a hole in the top of the oven, and you would sometimes put like a tray of food. Those remember back from the third bread of Shabbos. You put like a tray of food on top of the oven. You would have sometimes food cooking inside the oven, and you have trays on top of the oven. The person made a big mistake. They're cooking a flay chicks on top. They have a pan of chicken on top, and they have a pan of milk inside the oven. So now the oven's on. The oven's eating up with coals, and it's heating up, and the milk is starting to boil up. And now the steam coming out of the milk is shooting all the way up and hitting the bottom of the flay chick pan. So Shulchan Aruch calls it a rush, that's a problem. So the truth is not everyone even agrees that's a problem. Mishkanes Yaakov, who's a Talmud of Chaim Elojana, he claims that not everyone agrees to this rush, and he's not even sure we should follow this. But the Ma'aseh of Shulchan Aruch, we pass on this. We pass on Zeh is a halachic problem. So if Zeh is a halachic problem, so then this cheese that was baked up in the pizza oven, so that should be a problem. Again, unless you want to rely on this kula that we're saying, that, well, it's never really treif in the first place. But if you don't want to rely on that kula, so then l'chora, we should be concerned with zeya. Unless one wants to argue as follows. It's not clear what kind of foods actually produce zeya and which don't. This is a loaded question in poskim, and again, we spoke about this sometimes in the past, that there are some poskim argue that if the food is a more solid kind of a food rather than a liquid kind of a food, then there's a very good chance it's not going to produce real significant zeya. And unless you mama see like a cloud of steam, you know, burst forth from the food, you can probably assume that the amount of zeya that it's producing is negligible. And therefore, it's not even belay altogether. It doesn't even trace, doesn't even enter into the walls of the oven anyway. So if that is the case, so that would be another possible tzad l'hokel. Again, I didn't experiment with pizza cheese, but I imagine that there's not that much zeya coming out of a slice of pizza. And therefore, maybe one can argue is another tzad l'hokel. And even if we want to be machmir to kasher this oven, we don't want to rely on the fact that the Chachmei Rabbeinu Rabbi Tam said the cheese is kosher. We want to be machmir on this. Maybe we can argue that, well, it was never really a bleed in the first place. That would be significantly more atzad l'hokil. Just to preface, this is all assuming that the only issue we have is this gvina zakel. If there are other additives, as we said before, in this cheese, that could be a whole other problem. So it happened to be that the specifics of the cheese were ascertained, but there was nothing else really quote-unquote non-kosher in there. It's not a across-the-board statement, but assuming that those are the facts, there's nothing mamish treif gomer in here, it's just a gvizakam issue, so then we have almost like a shtip, like a sfeik. It was like two different studim to be making. At number one, we're not sure that the cheese was quote-unquote treif in the first place to really require kashering. At Imdin's lover it was, we're not sure there was a significant enough of a zeyah to create a bleah, to create an absorption of taste. In the second place, therefore, a combination of those two factors, maybe we could be a little bit more. So a suggestion was made that maybe we could split between the different parts of the oven. If the cheese, instead of slice of pizza, is put directly onto the oven, so then maybe that place of contact should be kashered. maybe the top of the oven doesn't have to be kosher. Now, just in terms of logistically, that may be much easier. Maybe much easier to kosher a bottom part of an oven than a top part of an oven, just practically speaking, a pizza oven. So maybe you could split and say, if you're going down the first kula, that, well, the cheese wasn't trafe in the first place, then nothing has to be kosher. If you're going down the second kula, so then maybe we could split and say that the part of the oven that didn't really come into physical contact with the food would not necessarily have to be kosher. So again, so there are a lot of things flying around in terms of the sugya, but the ABCs of the sugya begins back the very beginning of the Mishnah, begins with the Gvidas Akam in the first place. So the assumption is that Gvidas Akam is a problem. That's what the Mishnah says. Lachleikis Shabin Atam, and you know what the reason is, and if the reason doesn't apply, doesn't apply. We're machmir, like the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah, that the Isra applies even when the reason doesn't apply. But maybe, since we're only dealing about Kashan and Kalim, which is the Enabin Yomah anyway, we could be a little bit more lenient. And maybe combine that together with the fact that there may not be as significant to say as we thought it would be. But okay, I want to pick up.
Shabbat Shalom, thank you.
Laila Tov.
Thank you.